Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, friends. Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for being here. In just a moment, we are going to be joined by Paul Bredel. Looking forward to that interview with him today. I know you are as well. Paul is always amazing. He's the absolute best. Make sure to give him a follow at Paul_Bredel when you get a chance. Of course, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. We always appreciate that a ton as well. Before we get to Paul, just one real piece of news and notes, and it's actually not a Packers update. It's a New York Jets update. For all that talk back in the day of leverage and who's going to win the leverage battle, and is Brian Gutekunst really a GM, and Joe Douglas is the smartest guy in the room, you know, we don't need to stomp on anyone's graves here. We don't need to take this, you know, maybe too big of a victory lap, but just say things have not exactly gone according to plan for the New York Jets. And I'll always say this. I think the best trades are ones that work out for both teams, where both teams get exactly what they're looking out of it. It helps both franchises. Those are generally the trades that I think are just best, right? It works out for everyone. This has not been the case. Green Bay offloaded Aaron Rodgers' contract. They got multiple draft picks in compensation. They were able to use a lot of that salary cap space to go and get guys like Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney. Like, it has been a home run. And of course, you know, goes without saying, it also allowed them to really make that evaluation on Jordan Love and move forward with Jordan Love as their franchise quarterback, which has been huge as well. So the trade has worked out unbelievably for Green Bay. For New York, the GM has been fired. The coach has been fired. The team has been a complete dumpster fire. Aaron missed an entire season due to injury. His second season has been worse than what they did with Zach Wilson a season ago. It could not have gone, and it'd be hard to imagine a world in which that trade could have gone any worse. For all of the celebrating and all of the Aaron Rodgers is a New York Jet and he's going to be the savior of the franchise and they've got this Hall of Fame quarterback, it has been anything but. And reports out of New York today are that Woody Johnson wanted to bench Aaron Rodgers early in the season. And it has just been a complete failure. They've doubled down on it. They've again fired Robert Saleh, tried to go to a different coach. They've brought in Davante Adams. Nothing has worked. It's been a dumpster fire. So Joe Douglas, the latest in the New York Jets drama, he is out and there's nothing left. It's just ashes in New York at this point. And it may go on the remainder of the season. There's no playoff hopes or anything there. This, you know, everyone knows in New York is just going to be a complete teardown in the offseason. Where Aaron Rodgers goes from here will only remain to be seen. You have to imagine with Woody Johnson already wanting him benched earlier this year, Aaron's not going to be in New York next year. Where that leaves him again will only remain to be seen. And I made the case for the Minnesota Vikings. It's an interesting one. We don't need to necessarily go into that today. I don't really think that that's going to happen. All right, let's just go into it really quick. I don't really think that's going to happen, but if there is a case to be made for it, right? Sam Darnold is probably going to want a long-term deal. That probably doesn't happen in Minnesota because they just drafted the long-term quarterback in JJ McCarthy. He's probably going to be the starter at some point in time, but he is inheriting a team that's really good right now. And he's coming off a major injury. Just had an injection done on that knee recently. And he may not be, you know, I'm not saying fully healthy. I'm saying more fully ready to take on that team next year. But Darnold's going to want a long-term deal. They're not going to want to do that because they have McCarthy in the waiting. They may just need a one-year stopgap quarterback and connect the dots. Do I see it actually happening? Probably not, right? But there is a world there that maybe there's that small crease, that small gap. It's sort of hard to pinpoint where Aaron could play next year. I would say a 1% chance. Not impossible, but probably not super likely either. And now, here's our interview with Paul Bredel. I'm joined now by the great Paul Bredel. You can find him on ESPN Lacrosse. Of course, you can find him on Twitter at Paul_Bredel. Paul, it is great to be back chatting Packers with you, going over an interesting Packers-Bears game, looking ahead to Packers 49ers, and of course, all of the minutiae in between that's going on in Green Bay. But first of all, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm excellent. Happy to be back talking Packers as always, Andy. And yes, interesting is a great way to describe what we watched on Sunday.
I've said this a couple of times. It's a fun Rorschach test to see how everyone sort of felt about that game, because there seems to be a degree of difference with just about everyone. So I will start with that there. We'll put up the black and white ink blot that was Packers Bears with maybe like a hand reaching up towards a field goal block. But your key takeaways from that game?
I mean, the big one for me is just, again, taking a step back, we look at the difference in this Packers team between being 7-3 versus 6-4. I mean, one game difference in the win-loss column, but goodness, is it massive. If they're 6-4, there's three teams right now at 5-5. I think they're all in the NFC West, chasing Green Bay. So you only have a game lead in that regard. You're now 0-3 in the NFC North if you lose that game. You're now 2-4 in the NFC if you lose that game when it comes to potential playoff tiebreakers down the road. Like, getting that win and then looking ahead even to the upcoming schedule, San Francisco, Miami's playing better football, the Detroit Lions, you obviously still have a matchup on the road against the Minnesota Vikings. Like, that was a huge, huge win for this Packers team. And again, getting there, very, very interesting in how they did. For me, one of the big, you know, realizations afterwards, because as I'm watching the game, the offensive side of the ball, it just didn't feel right. Felt a little off, a little disjointed. But you go back, you rewatch the game, you look at the numbers, and excluding the kneel down before halftime, Packers had only 6 offensive possessions. They went to the red zone 5 times.
Yep.
They averaged 8.5 yards per play. And for some context, I think the Ravens lead the NFL on the season in that category at 7 yards per play. So they were finding success. It was just, again, we kind of go back to the situational football, the struggles on third down, obviously the issues in the red zone. And it wasn't just that they went 2-for-4 in the red zone, because as we all know, red zone success is, did you score a touchdown or not? A field goal still counts as a missed opportunity. The two visits where they didn't score a touchdown, they didn't even leave with points. So they left at least 6 points off the scoreboard just by not, one, having the field goal opportunity off the interception and then going for it on fourth down. So again, they have to be better in those areas. And it's a credit to the Bears as well. We knew coming into this game, this is one of, might have been the best red zone defense in football, one of the best third down defenses in football. And they played that way. They made things difficult for the Packers. But that was one of my kind of the big surprises. As you take a step back, you reevaluate, you go, all right, there was a decent amount of good from the offense in this game. It's just, washed away, because in those gotta have it key situations, they a lot of times didn't come through.
And it just shows the importance of red zone offense, because you can have this stellar performance in between the 20s all day long, and if you don't pay it off with touchdowns, you're left wanting for more. I mean, not to bring up the ultimate in like worst situations, but that Seattle Seahawks 2014 NFC championship game, like, there was opportunities early in that game to convert those drives into touchdowns. They didn't do it. And more often than not, those things will haunt you. Thankfully, in this one, it did not. They were able to come away with a win for a variety of different reasons, mostly due to a huge special teams play at the end. I just want to go back to what you were mentioning, though, between the difference between 7-3 and 6-4. I think it's fair to get caught up in the minutiae and in the details and go over what went well, what went poorly, and how Green Bay can be better moving forward and the things that they need to clean up and things like that. But at the end of the day, picking up wins like this, massively, massively important when, you know, your ultimate goal is to get in the dance and hopefully be playing your best at that point in time. They don't need to necessarily be playing their best football right now. In fact, we don't want them playing their best football right now. We want that later. So picking up those wins in the meantime, super important. And you look at that schedule, as you were mentioning, the remainder of the season, I can make an argument, Paul, that every single game on the schedule looks harder now after this past week than it did even a week ago. Yes, the 49ers lost, but it almost feels like they're going to be a little bit more desperate coming into this game, where like they have to have a win. They can't go to 5-6. They're going to be in no man's land if so. So you know they're going to be massively hungry and desperate in that game. As you mentioned, Miami looks better as of late. That looks tough. We know Detroit's going to be brutal. Seattle and Seattle just beat San Francisco. So like that is going to be a very tough game, and certainly looks harder after this past week. Freaking New Orleans with Rizzi at head coach looks a mile different than what anything out of Dennis Allen. And they've, I think, won a couple in a row, or at least 2 of 3. I forget which one it is, but they've looked better. At Minnesota still looks insanely tough. And we just saw Chicago give Green Bay everything that they could handle in that game in Chicago. So what maybe on paper immediately looked like, yep, that's just going to be like, no, like they're going to be even more ticked off that they lost this last game. And even if Chicago has, in all likelihood, nothing to play for in that game, they're going to be playing so that a Chicago Bear on that roster gets their first win against the Green Bay Packers, because nobody on that roster has a win against the Packers as a member of the Chicago Bears. And they're going to be sick of hearing about 11 straight games. So like, they're going to be wanting that game no matter what. So I would argue every game on that schedule looks harder after this week.
Yeah. You look at obviously what the expectations are for this Packers team this season. You see they're 7-3, obviously the playoffs, you expect them to be there, but yep. They're still, it's even at 7-3, just because one, how good the NFC North is, the NFC as a whole, they're only two games ahead of being out of the playoffs at this time. Like,
yep.
They have, you know, even as good as they've looked at times, even as with what their record is, there isn't a ton of wiggle room for them. And as you mentioned, the upcoming schedule, like games on Sunday against the Bears, where, you know, those are games you have to take advantage of because of what's lying ahead. And again, there's just not a lot of room. The margin for error right now is really, really small, just given the strength of the schedule, the strength of the NFC, the NFC North, all those different factors.
And we'll get to this 49ers game in just a moment as well. But the importance of this game, you lose this game coming up, you go to 7-4. Now San Francisco's at 6-5. You get another loss in the NFC column, another NFC team that has a tiebreaker against you in some playoff matchups. And all of a sudden, again, you go to just one game up on those teams and some teams that have tiebreakers on you, including San Francisco in that scenario. So this is going to be a major game for Green Bay as well. For the New York Times simulator, it goes from something like a 70% chance, 70-something chance to make the playoffs if they lose. They're at about 80 right now. It jumps up to like 94% if they win this game against San Francisco. So it's not quite punching your ticket to the playoffs, but a win against the San Francisco 49ers all but punches your ticket to the playoffs, barring a catastrophic collapse the remainder of the season, which we're not even going to speak into existence. So forget I even said that. One of the things that obviously did come up huge this week were the special teams, the weefence, if you will, from Rich Bisaccia. Paul, you and I have just asked for competence from the special teams for, I don't know, 70 years. And finally, they not only showed competence, but they showed, hey, you guys aren't having your best game. We can actually pick you up in this one. And the huge punt return by Jaden Reed at the end. Mm-hmm. Of course, the blocked kick, a beautiful punt by Daniel Whalen, once again, who's having a phenomenal season. This is the first time in a while I felt like, hey, this team won this game in large part and kind of because at the end of the special teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one of the absolute things I love about the game of football is some of that information we learn afterwards about everything within the preparation of the week that leads up to this one play, which obviously in this game was everything for the Packers. Yeah. And we learned a similar example of this was the game, Jacksonville game, where Malik Willis took over in the second half. And then that big pass to Reed, just everything beforehand, you know, after the game, Matt LaFleur says that on Saturday night, Rich Bisaccia is telling the team, like, I'm not going to understand it if we do not get a blocked extra point or a blocked field goal in this game. In the film work, they saw the Bears' interior field goal blocking unit was susceptible. They've seen past opponents have success at generating push. And then another factor is Bears kicker Cairo Santos. He has a lower trajectory, I think, than most kickers on his field goal attempts. So you add all that together, and Rich Bisaccia saw an opportunity for this team to get a block in this game. And I guess more than an opportunity, almost expected it to a degree. And Kenny Clark had said that this wasn't just a conversation that popped up on Saturday night before the game. Like, they were talking about it throughout the week, that Brooks or TJ Slayton, the other interior defender, were going to have an opportunity to get their hand on a ball. So again, I just love that aspect of it, where you get just a slight peek behind the curtain of everything that went into the week, and then seeing it come to life, make that impact play in that key moment, just spectacular. And like I said, for me, that's just one of the beautiful aspects of football, because whether something good happens, whether something bad happens, this is such an incredibly nuanced game. There's so many factors that go into making a play successful, or one thing that can go wrong out of many that leads to a play not working. And I thought this was just a terrific example of all of that work that goes into the week leading up to this one crucial pivotal moment. And credit to the Packers, credit to Carl Brooks, came through when they had to.
This is a big one. San Francisco is coming to Green Bay for an epic matchup on Sunday afternoon. And with a recent San Francisco loss, Green Bay could just put their playoff odds in jeopardy. But that's not all we're looking forward to this week. We're also looking forward to another winning week on Prize Picks. With Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, you can sign up and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. PrizePicks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off, which ones aren't, make your picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on PrizePicks. This week, yeah, I'm guessing Christian McCaffrey is going to get his against Green Bay's defense, but I also expect a huge week from both Jaden Reed and Tucker Kraft. The best part, whoever you want to go with, there are a ton of options out there that you can choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game. Hey everyone, with the holidays creeping up faster than your great aunt's fruitcake recipe, I've got something way better to share with you. If you want to look sharp for all those festive gatherings and maybe finally win that best groomed at the family dinner award, check out the latest masterpiece from Manscaped, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver. Trust me, it's like Rudolph for your face, guiding you to a smooth, irritation-free shave. Head over to manscaped.com and join the over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. Now, you may have recently seen Mustache Andy lately. It was a beautiful sight to behold, and that wouldn't have been possible without the Chairman Pro's Flex Adjust technology, which is basically like the holiday miracle of shaving. And when I needed even more precision to get that mustache look just right, there was the Precision Lock. And when you lock it in, the blade head sits firm so you can achieve a more precise shave, and that's exactly what I did. So get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. What are you waiting for? All right. Permission to be ridiculous for a moment.
Let it rip.
All right. You know how always in, I don't know if you've ever seen these like conversations in hockey where like, could you put like a sumo wrestler in the hockey net and would like he be wide enough to be like, could it just stop everything? Well, they did like a sports science thing and like figured out, no, it actually doesn't work, which I'm still skeptical of, but no, like it doesn't work. Is there a world like how many roster spots would you need to have a dedicated field goal blocker that's just like 7-7 that's lining up at the line? Is there like a complete level of absurdity to like think that, like, because I would have to think if Carl Brooks, who's not like the most ups guy in the world and is not like, you know, 6'6", 6'8", like anything crazy, if he's able to get that, you would think if there's a couple 7-7 dudes mm-hmm. that are right up at that line that have a little bit of jumping ability, you know, that could get up there, you would think that you would be able to block a decent chunk of kicks with that, which would seem to have like a decent chance. Am I like, how of the level of absurdity of anything that we've ever talked about? It's at like 100, but like, is there like, how many players would you have to be able to have on a roster to have a specialty field goal block person?
I don't think that many more, right? Maybe just a couple, two, three more to have that.
Right?
Have that advantage, but on paper, the logic makes sense.
I don't know. It's the most ridiculous thing ever. But I would love to know, I can't ask that question in like a press conference to Rich Bisaccia. I probably could, but like I wouldn't. But I would love to just like be able to pull him to the side and be like, why isn't there like a 7'5", like, you know, guy who can jump out of the building, you know, field goal block person for those exact scenarios? And I know obviously like. At the roster math makes it so that you can't just have a specialist like that, but I don't know. It's intriguing nonetheless to me. All right. I digress. The special teams came up huge and that was fantastic. And to me, it is one of the real positive takeaways from this game to see this special teams be able to be a unit that can actually help Green Bay win games, which doesn't seem like it should be a big thing, but it definitely is a big thing for a special teams that has struggled for so long in Green Bay. Another one of those positives that trended in the right direction in this game was just seeing a breakout performance from Christian Watson and somebody who can be this explosive, dynamic playmaker. I think we even talked about last week of like, you don't want this guy just becoming MBS 2.0 where it's just 9 routes and, you know, decoy throw and like things like that. Like, you want him to be involved in a significant way. We only 4 targets in this one, but man, did he make the most of them with 150 yards and really showed exactly what he's capable of in this offense.
Yeah, and to your point, yeah, he can do so much more than just be that vertical threat. We saw it on that last throw, that on the crossing route. Like, he has the ability to impact the game at all levels of the field, and he came into Sunday with 27 targets. That is the 5th most just on this Packers team. Like, it's the challenge for LaFleur as he puts together the game plan is because there are so many options. You can't just, you know, it's what the matchup dictates at the end of the day, right? And even if you go into a game saying, all right, this is a game where so-and-so is going to have these opportunities, all it takes is for the defense to do something differently. And then all of a sudden Love has to go somewhere else with his read and through his progression. So getting someone involved is, you know, maybe not as easy as it sounds, but LaFleur talked about this on Sunday, talked about this on Monday as well. You know, it's a credit to Christian Watson in just his approach and how he attacks the day every single day. And Watson said after the game, you know, it sounds cliche, but I just want to do whatever I have to do to help this team win. Like, that is number one to him. That is what matters. But it's because of his persistent preparation on a day-to-day basis that when his number was called in this game, he was able to come through on it because of that preparedness. And I think we've talked about it on here before, but Watson is such an impactful player even when the ball isn't coming his direction. Obviously, we know what he can do as a blocker, just like the other Packers receivers in the run game, but he has a gravity about him. You know, defenders pay attention to that size and speed, and that can create a one-on-one matchup for someone else. That can create better spacing underneath for another pass catcher to take advantage of. So even if the ball isn't going Christian Watson's way, and I know Jaden Reed has said this before, like, they can see how defenses defend the Packers differently when he's on the field versus when he's off. So even if the ball's not coming his way, he is a high impact player on this Packers offense, and credit to him for coming through. Cause I mean, that one on the middle at the end of the game, he had to dive for a great adjustment on the downfield throw and double coverage. Big like time. These weren't easy completions that he was hauling in either. He was making plays in this game. Obviously when this offense needed a spark, he was there to give it to him.
I can't say enough about Christian Watson. And I feel like, for whatever reason, and I don't know if it was the initial drop against the Minnesota Vikings in that first game or just some of the injury issues that he's unfortunately had, but it always feels like there's just this aura of, like, I don't know if it's negativity or what it is towards Chris. Like, he is one of the most unselfish wide receivers that I've seen. And to your point, like, not demanding the ball. There was a play earlier this year, and I know we pointed it out, but like, where he's open in the middle of the field and the ball doesn't come his way, and it ends up going on like a, I don't know if it's a check down or a crosser. It was something underneath of where he was. And I don't know how many times I've seen a receiver, Paul, that he's wide open in the middle of the field, doesn't get the ball. And well, we've seen some receivers just leave the field. We've seen other receivers, you know, maybe you throw a tantrum or just get upset or just kind of shut down the rest of the play. Christian Watson, wide open in the middle of the field, doesn't get the ball, sees the underneath receiver get the ball, turns around and just immediately starts blocking somebody literally into the end zone, and just, you know, goes off on a tear, making sure that he's setting up his teammate for success. There's never been a, you know, conduct detrimental to the team. There's never been a anything out of Christian Watson other than just tell me what my job is on this play and I'm going to go out and do it to the best of my ability. And oh yeah, then when you give me these opportunities, I'll go 4 for 150 and I'll, you know, I'm not going to gloat about it or demand the ball more. I'm just going to go about my business like every other day. I think there should be a lot more respect and reverence for what Christian Watson brings to this team than I think maybe there has been. I just love watching him play football. And I think, again, he's an unbelievably unselfish player.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, when it's cliche to say, you know, I just want to do whatever is best for the team to help them win. But when Watson says it, you 100% believe him, because, again, for everything you mentioned, you see how he operates in the games. You see how he goes about his business. And that's what matters to him, just helping this team win.
Yeah, you love to see it. Speaking of players who are helping this team win, we got our first glimpse of Brenton Cox this past week, and we saw some flashes, and well, a couple of plays were unblocked. He still was able to finish them. I thought he had a solid game, but man, the way you heard Matt LaFleur talk about him on Monday, effusive in his praise, certainly feels like Brenton Cox is getting more playing time, not less. And I don't know to the level that I want to go of being like, look at what they found. They found this next big guy or anything like that. But he definitely feels like somebody who's going to be able to help this team moving forward, and somebody that can fill that role vacated by Preston Smith.
Yeah, last Thursday when Jeff Hafley was speaking with us, that was kind of my like, oh, whoa moment of,
yep,
they really, really like this guy. Because Jeff Hafley goes, and you can tell in someone's inflection, I'm really, really excited about Brenton Cox. And, you know, again, it's that behind the scenes stuff, the momentum that he built during training camp, he's been carrying over to practice. I mean, Hafley was talking about, you go back and you're rewatching the practice tape each day, and you keep seeing number 57 jumping out off the tape, just with his ability to cause chaos, I should say, on the scout team. And so all of that was happening behind the scenes, which played, you know, a factor in Green Bay's confidence that they have in him, which, you know, trickle down effect, allowing them to trade away Preston Smith. And again, we saw that ability, that high impact presence that he can bring. Again, for any young player, it's all about consistency. It's about doing it again on a week to week, on a day to day basis. But you get the confidence that he's going to be able to do that again because of how Halfley has spoken so highly of him, what he's done on the practice field. And then Matt LaFleur on Monday, just talking about his, again, goes back to your approach. How are you on a day to day basis in your preparation? And it's those, you know, things away from Sunday that we don't see, where it seems like Brenton Cox is just really shining right now. And it's that preparation that's going to carry over oftentimes into production when it matters most. And he came out of college, I mean, he was a five-star recruit.
Yep.
He was productive as a pass rusher in the SEC. Like, the talent was always there for him. But like any young player, it's, you know, refining the skill sets. For a pass rusher, it's, all right, what's your secondary move when you can't just run through or around everyone? And I think I mentioned this last week, but I'm going to say it again because it just sticks out in my mind so much from training camp, is the violent hands, the power, the pop. I mean, that one rep, again, I think it was Caleb Jones, Kadeem Telford, you could just hear the pop as he hits the pads echoing through Ray Nitschke Field on that practice field. Like, he has the ability to get after the quarterback, and with a refined skill set honing in on that, I think the potential is absolutely there. And you can hear it when the LaFleur and Halfley are talking about him. And I think LaFleur even said there's going to be more opportunities to come for him.
Yeah, and you would think so, just even based off of this last game, and certainly based on what both Halfley and LaFleur have been saying. Paul, I know you remember, and you were kind of mentioning it here too, like, go back to OTAs and mini camps, and like, he was jumping off the field every single time, to the point where there were a couple times, and obviously when you look at the back of the jersey, sometimes it's tough to see, and that 57 sometimes can look like a 52 if you just glance at it wrong. And there were a couple times where I thought I was watching Rashawn Gary out there and be like, man, he's looking really good. And I'm like, oh, that's actually Brenton Cox that's out there. And like, there were multiple times where he was playing extremely violent football, getting to the quarterback. And I did think, like, that was obviously OTA's mini camps where it was pre-pads, right? So like, he was showing up then, and then training camp came along, and it was definitely a little bit of a quieter training camp than what we saw in OTA's and mini camps. But you still saw really, really good stuff, even going as far back as OTAs and mini camps, to the point where, again, he looked outstanding at that point. So I'm excited about him getting his opportunity. I know a lot of people have been wanting just a shot, right? Just see what he has. And first glimpses, at first glance, he looks the part. And I think, again, he is going to get some more playing time moving forward.
Yeah, and like you said, that tackle for loss that he had, you know, he got through the backfield before the blocker could come across, went untouched to the quarterback. And again, you know, there's a lot more difficult plays that he's going to have to make, but can you make the easy ones? Can you make the ones that are in front of you? And he took advantage of that. That's all you can ask him to do.
Justice yesterday brought up a great point as well, is the reason he gets the sack too is because he made that unbelievable tackle for loss, scraping down the line and getting to the running back right away. So you don't necessarily want to now account a blocker for him. You want to keep him honest. So you do the bootleg next time around, and then he goes right to the quarterback on that one. So they're just like, that's just completely out of the playbook at that point, because he can't run either thing, because apparently Brenton Cox knows how to read minds and know exactly where to go on the play. But yeah, it doesn't look, you know, or it looks unblocked or whatever, but there's still obviously a nuance to that. And he did a great job on both of those plays, making sure to finish them, which isn't always the easiest, especially against Caleb Williams, which we saw this past game against Kingsley and Igbari in a couple different occasions. So kudos to him for showing out, getting that opportunity, and he's certainly going to get a lot more of them. Speaking of that exact topic, though, going back to Caleb Williams for a moment, it was a little bit jarring to see, really kind of for the first time, a quarterback kind of have their way running the ball, both from a scramble standpoint and from some, you know, read option and keeper stuff, especially after you have Anthony Richardson, Jalen Hurts, Kyler Murray. Like, it's not like they haven't had practice against some very fast mobile quarterbacks. They've held up well in those games. This one, they did not. It seems like this was obviously a new wrinkle in Thomas Brown's Chicago Bears offense, but Green Bay not exactly prepared for it, and it definitely hurt them in this game.
Yeah, I mean, switching to the new coordinator this week, and, you know, Halfley talked about this, not as if there's going to be this entirely new playbook that's implemented, but what the Packers had to be mindful of is, were there parts of the playbook that maybe Shane Waldron wasn't utilizing, or what does Thomas Brown do in certain situations? You know, in second and short, third and short, he might dial up a different play than what Waldron would. And it's in those tendencies, parts of the playbook, where the differences were going to come. And both Kenny Clark, Xavier McKinney spoke to this afterwards, that they didn't expect as many designed quarterback runs from Caleb Williams from this Bears offense as they saw in this game. And to your point, you know, the Packers entered this game as a solid run defense this season. I think they were giving up 4.3 yards per carry entering the game, which was the eighth lowest in football. As you mentioned, Jalen Hurts, Kyler Murray, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis has mobility. You know, they've shown the ability to contain those guys. So it very much felt like, yes, they were caught off guard to a degree by the Bears utilizing Williams in that aspect. And you could see it too. I mean, the edges weren't being set very well. There were poor angles that opened up running lanes. Again, it all just looked like a team that wasn't necessarily, you know, prepared for that element. And that just had a massive, massive trickle down effect to the rest of the game. You know, the Bears' ability to pick up, move the ball on the ground, help them be more efficient on third downs. They had a lot of third and short situations. They finished the game 9 of 16 in those situations. They dominated the time of possession, held the ball for almost 13 more minutes than Green Bay, ran 25 more plays on offense than what the Packers offense did. Like we said, Packers offense had only 6 real possessions in that game. And so a lot of that everything just mentioned started with the Bears' ability to move the ball on the ground. And for, you know, all of the praise we've heaped on Jeff Hafley for the adjustments that he's made from week to week and even game to game, Packers didn't seem to really do that in this matchup with the Bears.
I know right now is a tough time for everyone. Grocery and gas prices are soaring, and with the holidays coming up, we could all use a little bit more disposable income. And when you've got less than stellar credit, your options can be limited. But I've got some great news for you. Kickoff can simplify credit building with plans that are the fastest and easiest way to safely jumpstart your credit, making what feels impossible possible. And best of all, no credit check is required. I absolutely love Kickoff because of its simplicity and its results. Now, I discovered Kickoff online and it helped me build my credit fast. And as far as those results, users with credit under 600 increased their credit by an average of 28 points in the first month. It's simple. You make on-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows fast. And you can start building credit immediately for only $1 in your first month. Want more proof? Kickoff has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store, and 98% are 5 stars. So join over a million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Build your credit fast with Kickoff. Get your first month for $1. That's 80% off the normal price when you go to getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's Kickoff without the C, getkickoff.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate the offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only, subject to approval. Average impact of 28-point credit increase in the first month based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0 changes for Kickoff customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, usually it feels like they've got a plan A and a plan B and can kind of go to different things and make those adjustments when needed at halftime. And especially for a team that, again, did have specific game plans in place for guys like Jalen Hurts, Anthony Richardson, Kyler Murray, et cetera, it would feel like, all right, hey, remember some of the stuff we did against those guys? We're going to go back to doing some of that stuff. I don't know if there was kind of like a mandate from Matt LaFleur or somebody else of like, hey, enough with this contain crap. We need to get to the quarterback and get some pressures and some sacks. Like we just need to create some impact plays. So we're going to go for that. And if we give up a few runs, so be it. Okay. If that's going to be the case, you probably need to get there more than a few times like they did in this game. But it just felt like there wasn't that adjustment that was needed. I talked to Aaron and Nagler and a little bit of Justice about this as well. It just felt like Green Bay was, or I should say Chicago, was just a half step ahead of Green Bay all day when it came to the offensive and defensive adjustments. Anytime Green Bay brought a blitz, it seemed like Chicago had an answer for it. Anytime Green Bay went into coverage, it seemed like Chicago had an answer for it. It just felt like the Bears were definitely a little bit more in rhythm. It felt like Green Bay couldn't really quite get that big play up until they get to 3rd and 19, and then they still couldn't get off the field. So a disjointed, semi-disappointing day for the defense. It's always difficult when you give up 19 points in a game. You kind of feel like that's still a winning performance. I would have given that, I think, more of a pass if they were the ones that got the stop at the end of that game. It was like, we allowed 19 points. We got off the field at the end when it mattered most. I'd have been like, okay, didn't love it, but I can at least respect it and you know, can feel a little bit more confident. I think the dagger for me for the defense in that game was allowing Chicago to drive down into field goal range to get the game-winning field goal. And had you not been bailed out by an elongated Carl Brooks middle finger, you know, it probably would have been a lot different how I would have felt about that performance.
Yeah, and obviously we focus on what did the Packers do well, where did the Packers come up short, but I mean, credit to one, Thomas Brown for stepping in the game plan that he put together, and then Caleb Williams going out there and executing it, because obviously that's a part of this equation as well. The Bears played well in that regard.
I think the biggest takeaway here is that I miss Shane Waldron, and I wish that he was still the offensive coordinator for Chicago. All right, I want you to rank your level of concern between defensive line, linebacker, and secondary. So from most concerned to least concerned, how would you rank those three right now?
For me, I'm going to go with the defensive line first. And the reason that I'm choosing that is because, again, that trickle down. Like if your defensive front is slowing the run, is getting after the quarterback, everybody else on the field benefits from it. So if you can get improved play from that, I think the entire defense is going to look so much better. Again, you slow the run, now they're in second and nine. It's a predictable passing situation. You have the advantage. Obviously, we know how important getting after the quarterback is from a pressure standpoint, disrupting the timing and rhythm, causing mistakes, potential interception opportunities. So if there's a unit that I can, you know, wave a wand and say we get better, more consistent performance from, it's a defensive front. Because that secondary, where again, there's question marks, they become better because now they don't have to be in coverage for 3-4 seconds consistently. Number two, I'm going to go to the secondary. And a lot of this decision-making on my end is just the value of the cornerback position over the linebacker position. And you hope that once Jair Alexander gets healthy and is back on the field, that they can find that stability at that position group, because you know Keyshawn Nixon is having his ups and downs. They went to Carrington Valentine this week over Eric Stokes, but again, I think a lot of the defense, the back end can get a lot of help from the front, and then I would put the linebacker position at third.
Interesting. I would probably go defensive line, linebacker, and then defensive backfield. I'm a little bit more of like, first of all, like once you get Jair Alexander back, I think if that just sort of solidifies itself, I actually feel fairly comfortable, especially if Carrington Valentine maybe can get a little bit more time at the corner. I think just again, Carrington moving ahead of Eric Stokes at minimum is going to be, I think, a big step for this defense. I trust Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney a ton on the back end, Jair on that one corner spot. And then to me, like maybe you platoon Keyshawn Nixon and Javon Bullard in the slot and maybe get Carrington more on the outside. Or again, even if it's Carrington and Keyshawn Nixon splitting on the outside with maybe, you know, Javon Bullard in the slot, I think they have enough playmakers there. I think they have enough players there. I think it just needs to gel. And to your point from earlier, if all of a sudden the defensive line starts getting more pressure, that secondary inherently is going to start looking a whole heck of a lot better. I actually think they've done a pretty good job of holding up all things considered, considering this isn't a defense that's been able to generate a ton of pressure. So I'd probably put them last. Defensive line definitely first for me too. And then just linebacker, it just never quite feels consistent enough for me in any real way. Obviously, Quay really struggled in this game. Edgerrin Cooper had a couple bad angles and a couple bad plays that have been mostly uncharacteristic of him. I feel like for the most part, he's done a really nice job. I think everyone else is okay. Just always kind of leaves me wanting just a little bit more. And sometimes just that sour taste in my mouth, especially from Quay, when just doesn't quite live up to expectations.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
All right, let's go to Packers 49ers. Let's start on the 49ers side of things. They are a very beat up team at the moment. Of course, we know Brandon Ayuk is out for the year. Brock Purdy's a little bit banged up. Looks like Nick Bosa is going to be a major question mark for this week at best. George Kittle missed this past week with an injury. We'll see if he can go this week. I know it seemed like he was fairly close this past week. So that would lend me to believe that there's probably a decent chance that he's going to play this week. But either way, this is definitely I don't think anywhere near quite the same juggernaut 49ers team that we're quite used to. Obviously getting Christian McCaffrey back helps quite a bit, but they are definitely beat up. And again, that technically based on tiebreakers, the fourth place team in the NFC West right now.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, I think for many Packer fans out there, there's the previous seasons that kind of weigh on this upcoming matchup in terms of your feelings of it. And again, Kyle Shanahan, there's still talent on that roster. You're never going to count the 49ers out of any game. But I think a lot of this starts with, as you mentioned, finding a way to contain Christian McCaffrey. Because, again, you get the run game going. There's so much benefit that can provide the rest of the offense. And even if you're shorthanded in the passing game at the receiver position or tight end, when you're operating from those manageable down and distances, puts added stress on the defense, right? The entire playbook's open for the offense. You can run on second and short. You can throw deep. You can check it down. You can utilize play action. You got to be prepared for everything. So finding a way to contain McCaffrey, I think for me is on one. And again, not breaking news here, anyone, but I think that's really one of the big factors in this game, especially just given, again, the injuries that the 49ers are navigating coming into this game.
Yeah, I think so too. I think containing Christian McCaffrey, making sure that Brock Purdy isn't getting into that rhythm, because when he gets in a rhythm, he's just, it feels like he's in his zone and he's completely unstoppable. So again, defensive pressure is going to be huge in this game. You do not want him sitting in clean pockets and just sort of picking you apart. Debo Samuel, again, another one where you don't want him to start getting momentum in this game. He'll start running over people consistently if you give him that opportunity. George Kittle's been a pain in the side. So you still have the, in my opinion, the best left tackle in football and Trent Williams, you know, patrolling that left tackle side. So there's still a lot of talent here. I think their defense is a little bit more susceptible, especially if Nick Bosa does not play in this game. I think their secondary is okay, but the pass rush is not the same without Bosa. Devondre Campbell's patrolling the middle of that field at times. So there's weaknesses there. I think Green Bay is going to need to do a much better job of putting up points and being more efficient from a red zone standpoint if they want to come out of a win in this game. But I like Green Bay's chances. The first time San Francisco has been an underdog all season long. It's only 2.5 points for Green Bay. But if Green Bay could take care of business here and knock San Francisco down a peg, again, Green Bay goes to about 94% probability to make the playoffs with this win.
Yeah, and I think from the Packers' perspective, I think just seeing Jordan Love build off of what he did in Chicago, again, watching the game live, at least for me, felt a little clunky, a little disjointed, but you hear Matt LaFleur talk about Love's performance and going back and watching it, and he's very encouraged by what he saw, and you can see why. There was, you know, more of the checkdowns. I think Josh Jacobs was the second leading receiver behind Christian Watson.
He was, yeah.
In this game, and just from a mobility standpoint, you know, Love was a full participant in all three practices going into this week, you know, and that hasn't been common for him this season. He's either been out or he's been limited. So there's just the continuity of getting those reps, but then there's the mobility, and not just in his ability to extend plays and run, but LaFleur talked about this, just how he navigates in the pocket to avoid pressure, to just little things like little nuances like that play an important role with the quarterback position. So, and again, even the interception he threw, obviously you can't do that. You got to clean it up, but it wasn't a decision. You know, Matt LaFleur said, I think 2-3 times, that's where the ball was supposed to go. So there's a lot of encouraging aspects from what we saw from Jordan Love in that game. Again, even though it didn't always translate in some of those key moments, as Matt LaFleur said, it's plenty that they have to clean up, but I think overall, and you could tell from LaFleur's, you know, on Monday, just encouraged by Love's performance. And so now, of course, it's all right, take another step forward and another step forward. So like you said, the Packers are peaking at the right time.
A lot of week left. We don't even have an injury report for either team yet or anything like that. But how's your gut feeling about Packers 49ers heading into this weekend at this point?
It's a great question. I'm going to lean Packers on this one. Just again, I think the injuries are a big part of it. Obviously, I think being at home is an important factor for them as well. But so right now, that's where my early gut takes me.
Yeah, I don't know. Anytime I see San Francisco on the schedule, I think I just have PTSD from recent games. So I'm nervous about this one, to say the least, but I think we're going to see a much better Packers performance than we've seen over these past couple weeks. I think they're going to come out, again, show the efficiency on offense, but hopefully get that red zone offense cleaned up a little bit. I think they're going to be able to put up points on San Fran. I really do. I think this could come down to some key plays. I think it could come down to special teams again, quite frankly. And I don't necessarily mind that as much anymore. I feel like Green Bay's got the field goal kicker. They got the kick return. They got the punt returner. Daniel Whalen's been fantastic. Like, it doesn't quite feel like there's that weakness on special teams that there once was, which of course going against the 49ers at Lambeau Field, probably famous last words, but well, you know, what could possibly go wrong? But Paul, I appreciate you a ton. Hopefully you are right. Hopefully this is trending in the way of Green Bay and they pick up this massive win this weekend. Tell us all about where we can find all your incredible work.
I appreciate it, Andy. Follow me on Twitter at Paul_Brettel. Head to ESPNLacrosse.com. All my work there, multiple articles per day. Check it out. I do appreciate it.
He doesn't stop writing. It's just a constant stream of articles, and they're all incredible. So make sure to check them out. Again, ESPNLacrosse.com. You can find him at Paul_Brettel. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Paul and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.